direct from the web, it's Billy Masters Live. And now, please welcome your host, Billy Masters.
And right on time. I mean, you know, right on time by theater standards. You know, you always start 10 minutes late. If you're ever running late for the theater kids, just don't worry about it, because if you're just 6 minutes late, they're just bringing the lights down. Welcome to Billy Masters Live. I am, of course, your host, Billy Masters. Thank you, Monica. Today is Thursday. You know, if I didn't see it, I would have no idea what day it is. Thursday, December 8th, 2022. And we are just going to get to the show, but there's two things I want to do before getting to the show, which is getting us into the show. Last week, our guest's name was invoked in this show. So let's show the clip from last week to remind you what we said. And it was good, so don't worry. Me too.
I was down in New Orleans, and he was filming American Horror Story, and Christine Ebersole was as well. And so I took them around one day, and that was the craziest car ride, because Christine, you know, is hilarious and wild, you know, and so is Leslie. So, and those two voices are the most distinct voices in the world. And I'm driving in my Honda Civic, I think, driving them around. I think a Honda Fit I had at that time. And those two voices in the car cackling. I mean, it was, I'll never forget that. I mean, showing them New Orleans and taking them to restaurants. And I mean, it was amazing. Amazing.
And I guess we should mention, you know, Christine Ebersole may be on this show in 2 weeks. And that's because she is appearing in Provincetown on New Year's Eve at Town Hall.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. And Christine's voice gets better and better and better the older she gets. It is.
Yeah.
With that voice, you know, and then to be able to sing like
grown into her character.
Yes. I mean, it is. She is just so amazing. I mean, amazing.
And just because, you know, we don't want to be the only ones talking about Christine Ebersole, here is the introduction for our guest.
If somebody doesn't have any talent, get off the stage. Well, you're wasting my time. But if they've got it, and I'm talking about Mama Rose kind of talent, you've either got it or you've had it.
Right.
And I'll tell you, I haven't got a jealous bone in my body. I am so uplifted by seeing talent. I can't stop crying, applauding, screaming. Mm-hmm. And I had a recent, I'm so thrilled that it happened to me just a few weeks ago when I saw Christine Ebersole in mm-hmm. Grey Gardens. Mm-hmm. That's coffee. That's coffee. That's talent.
Yeah.
That somebody said to me, I won't go into that. I'll only tell you that that girl knocks my socks off.
And she knocks my socks off too. Christine Ebersole, welcome to Billy Masters Live.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I know that you must have seen, obviously, Stritch say that, but what is that?
Yeah.
You know, for somebody who I'm sure you grew up watching and admiring, what does it mean to a performer to hear that from the previous generation?
Well, it kind of makes me cry a little bit because I really love her and I miss her.
Yeah. Yeah. She was a great lady and a great example of the work ethic of being an actor.
What is the work ethic?
No, I think that she really epitomized the work ethic.
Yeah, she did. She definitely did.
You know, and you know, I hope that this is a compliment to you, but I always think of you as a journeyman actor, somebody who goes after the role, who gets into the nitty-gritty, who is driven by the work.
Yeah, that's true. I'm kind of like a Clydesdale, you know. I'm a workhorse. You know, maybe parading as a prized pony, but it's really a Clydesdale.
Which, of course, was apropos of war paint, which we'll get into. But
yes.
What was the dream for you as a kid? What was the goal? Did you have one?
Yeah, I wanted to be a nurse.
I didn't know that. Really?
Yeah, I just wanted to be a nurse. I did.
And what? So you must be terribly disappointed.
No. No, because in a way, it's like administering, you know, it can, being in the theater and singing particularly, I think, can sort of be akin to administering healing medicine, you know, mm-hmm. It can be like that.
And how did you end up? We have something in common. We both went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. How did you end up there?
I was at McMurray College in Jacksonville, Illinois, and a friend of mine who had left the school had sent a brochure for the American Academy, and my girlfriend was down there visiting me, and I didn't really think much about it. And she says, you're filling out this application before we leave the room. So she made me fill out the application, and then I got an audition, like a regional audition in the Chicago area, and that's how I got into the American Academy. Because really, I kind of came to the crossroads at the American Academy, I mean, at McMurray College. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, my mother was asking me what I was going to major in. And I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll be a lawyer or maybe I'll be a social worker. And she said, no, get into music, get into theater. And my father was the same way. I mean, they were both very supportive of that. And I had a teacher at McMurray College that said, don't stay here. You need to leave. You need to go to New York.
Wow.
Yeah. So I had all these little angels kind of working in my favor, you know. They were kind of moving me and pushing me along.
Did you think that it was going to be musical theater or did you think
drama? No, not at all. I envisioned myself as, you know, an aspiring dramatic actress who would sing maybe in nightclubs.
Mm-hmm. Because
so I never combined the two, you know?
Yeah, it's so interesting to me because when I think of you, and no offense to your voice, which is incredible, but I think of the acting first. Yeah. And I think there are actresses who can sing and act through a song versus singers who can, you know, maybe act, but, you know.
Right, right. Yeah, I think I always considered myself, kind of like an entertainer, but an actor who can sing.
And we should say, because, you know, even though I'm sitting there saying I don't think of you as a singer first, you have a fantastic CD out, After the Ball, which just came out a couple of months ago. And I love this picture. So tell me about this picture.
Yeah, that's backstage at the Paper Mill Playhouse. I was playing Trixie Delight in Paper Moon, and that's my husband, Bill, and that's my firstborn, Elijah, who is just a couple months old there.
Oh, God, it's such a beautiful picture. I mean, the smile on your face.
I mean, there's so much love in the photo, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, the other thing, it's not a glamorous shot. You're just off stage or about to go on stage.
Right. I have some my wig cap on.
That's what I was going to ask. So much the glamour of show business.
Yeah, exactly.
And we mentioned you're also going to be singing in Provincetown this on New Year's Eve with, of course, our mutual friend, the fabulous Billy Stritch.
Oh, yay. Yay. I know. I'm really excited.
And, you know, again, you do so much drama, comedy, television, film, nightclubs, characters. When you do a cabaret show, do you really have to sift through so much stuff to really come up with that theme?
I mean, this show that we're doing on New Year's Eve is just kind of just a rollicking fun time with Billy Stritch, you know. And he really makes it so easy, you know. It's almost like we're having a party in our living room and invite everybody to it, you know. That's the way it feels like when I'm on stage with him. Like I don't have to worry about anything, you know.
And yeah, I think he's a great partner.
I'm sorry?
He's a great partner. I always think he's more than an accompanist. It's really
partnership. Yeah. Yeah, and it's just it's so much fun to sing duets with him. Oh my gosh, I love it so much. But you know, like when I'm doing my other shows, it's a different animal, you know, because it has a really strong narrative, and then one mm-hmm. song leads to the story, leads to the song, leads to the story, and this is much more. It's not as structured in that way. I mean, it's structured in terms of the songs that we sing, but in between is not as structured.
Right. And it's, as you said, it's more of a party, more of a celebration versus a narrative.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm really curious, what was your big break? What was the first thing that you hit with? Because I know that you were waitressing in New York, and I know you did soaps, which were, it's unfortunate they're gone, because great training for young actors.
Well, there are some. I think they're only in LA, though, right?
Right. I think only three.
General Hospital and Young and the Restless and the Bold and Beautiful. It's really hard to say, like, what was the big break, because it's such an eclectic career. You know, I was waiting tables, and then I went from waiting tables at the Lions Rock to being in a play on Broadway, and then, you know, having the producer buy my equity card because I had never done anything. And and then from that, the show closed and I was back waiting tables. So, and then went from there, I mean, you know, to for example, like, doing Oklahoma, mm-hmm. 8:00 in Oklahoma, and then having 3 days to learn Camelot with Richard Burton because they fired the girl who they had originally hired for the part. So I had three right. days to learn that. And then when that show closed, the show didn't close, I left mm-hmm. because Richard Burton took ill, and I had finished my year contract, and I finished with Richard Harris. And then I came back to New York, and I was going to take the summer off. And then I got Saturday Night Live. So, and then from there was like, you know, Tootsie, and then, you know, Three Sisters, and then Amadeus. And it was just like, what? It's just, you know. So, I mean, how do you pinpoint? It's just like one thing just was connected to the other. I mean, when you first asked me that, mm-hmm. the first thing that came to my mind was Grey Gardens.
Okay. And that's kind of, like 20 years, you know, into the, like, career.
I'm 40 years into it, you know what I mean?
Well, do you feel like that you've made it? Do you feel like you've made it now, at least? Or do you ever feel like you've made it?
I don't know what it means to make it. Yeah. What does it mean? You know, because it's such a relative term. You know, if I compare my life to like Meryl Streep, no, I didn't make it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know what I mean? In other words, it's just like her echelon and her level and all that is just, it's different. You know?
Yeah, but I think it depends on how you define it.
I'm a Clydesdale. I told you, I'm a working stiff. So it's just like I keep working. So I'm just so grateful that I'm having all these opportunities that are so different.
And again, you never know where they're going to come from.
Wait, say that again?
You never know where they're going to come from, apparently.
No, you never know where they're going to come from. But it also is like probably why I'm not famous. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like, but I'm not. I'm not famous.
Well,
No, I'm not famous. I'm not. I'm not famous. I'm not a celebrity because it's like it's like I'm a jack of all trades. You know what I mean? I can do all these different things. Like, you know, and I've had the opportunity to do them. So, you know, I'm so glad now. I think when I was younger, I wanted to be famous, but
did you?
Yeah, I thought it would bring me happiness, you know, but it doesn't work that way. But I have always been able to work mm-hmm. and do all these different things and do all these different creative projects. And, you know, now I'm doing a TV show.
Right.
You know, after 50 years in the business. Not and my first numerous, TV show, but it's the first time I've been on a network show that is that's gone on more than a year.
And I didn't know, but I found out in the research that there were several attempts of you have building a show around you. Or at least, you know, talks about a sitcom.
Well, no, there was, I did one called Rachel Gone RN.
Mm-hmm.
That was with Kevin Conroy and Megan Mullally. That was in 1991. But that's really, I think that's the only one I did where I was like the central figure. I was the title character, you know.
Right. We do have just a couple comments while we're here. Jim Lapita says, Christine wanted to say hello. Loved costuming you in Island Sun in Hawaii. We had a ball long time ago.
Oh, nice. Yes.
So I'm curious. You say you're not famous, but you thought fame would make you happy. Are you happy?
Oh, yeah. But it's not because... It's happiness is derived in not the ways that you imagined it, you know?
Right. So you didn't need fame to become happy.
No, I think generally I'm kind of a happy person in general, you know, but I mean, in terms of just, you know, I have to tell you a story. There's a really good story that kind of taught me something. I was asked by Dustin Hoffman to come and do a screen test that he was doing for Tootsie. And it was really kind of to see how his makeup was, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And after the screen test, and it was all improvised and everything. After the screen test, he invited me to go to the dailies. And so I went to the dailies with him and his, you know, it's like all the people in the high positions were all there. And he's sitting next to me and, you know, I'm doing Oklahoma on Broadway and I'm also doing Ryan's Hope. So I was doing Ryan's Hope during the day and Oklahoma at night.
And testing with Dustin Hoffman.
But the thing is that really was interesting was that really struck me was that he was saying to me, you know, who am I kidding? In the dark, you know, while we are watching this, you know, watching him up on screen, he's going, who am I kidding? Well, I can't do this. I can't do this. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. You just finished Kramer versus Kramer. You just got an Academy Award nomination. You're going off to England to meet the Queen of England. And you're, you know, confessing to me that you can't really do this. You know, that I'm thinking, you know, and here I am, just Ado Annie going, no, you've got to keep on, you know, kind of thing. I was thinking, what is it? You know, it just shows you that happiness or this feeling of, you know, value or usefulness is an inside job. It's not something that comes from outside of you. It just doesn't work that way. That's why, you know, you think, you know, you compare your insides to other people's outsides, and it's an illusion. It's not true. So you think, oh, if I had that job, you know, that went to, you know, somebody else, that I would have been happy, but it doesn't work that way.
Well, you mentioned in the list of things that got you to Grey Gardens 40 years later, and I don't know how I forgot this until I saw this clip. You were on Saturday Night Live. So I want to show a clip and then I want to ask you how you got this. So let's just show a quick clip.
Last night I killed my husband. We were married 7 years. When I tried to hide his body, my eyes filled up with tears. I hated how he beat me, but since he's gone, I've found like having him around. I hated all his habits and smelly
is so funny.
Gosh.
So, first off, who wrote the song?
I'm not sure. It might have been Michael O'Donohue, but I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, all right. So how did you get Saturday Night Live?
Well, that's the thing. Dick Ebersole wanted to...
No relation.
No relation. Dick Ebersole wanted to add singing to the show. And he saw... But interestingly, again, he saw me in a screen test that I had done for Love, Sydney, which was Tony Randall. It ended up, the part ended up going to Susie Kurtz. Mm-hmm. But, and it was a dramatic scene where my character, gets pregnant and I was crying in the scene and stuff like that. And so he felt that it wasn't comedic at all, but he felt that I was believable. And so he, invited me in, but I didn't audition, I didn't audition.
Really?
No, I did not audition because I wasn't a stand-up. That's the thing. I had just come off the road playing Guinevere. It's so nutty. You know what I mean? I was like, Guinevere opposite Richard Burton and Richard Harris, St. Genevieve, right? And it's like, now I'm thrown into this arena of all these stand-ups and improv people, And I just-
And was it fun?
That. I just knew what was on the script.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah. I mean, it was an amazing experience. It really was. And I mean, I think that the way that I felt that I could contribute was through the music. Tom Malone sure. was the musical director, and he ran the Saturday Night Live band. And there was a lot of things that, that I got to do music wise. And that's where I felt that I had confidence. I was fine with the acting and everything, it just wasn't it wasn't what I was used to. Let's put it that way. It was a new experience for me.
Who were your castmates? Yeah. Who were you?
Yeah. It was, Eddie Murphy, Joe Piscopo, Tony Rosato, Tim Kazurinsky, Mary Gross, Robin Duke, Brian Doyle Murray, and me.
Wow. Good cast.
Yeah, it was a great cast. Amazing cast.
Were you just there one season?
One season. Replaced by Julia Dreyfus.
I think she was there two or one and a half. It's like a very short time for her as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's like that weird transition because Lauren wasn't there.
She was there for five. It was Dick. It was Lauren Michaels, and then it was Gene Demanian for a year. And then... Dick Ebersole for 5 years, and then Lauren came back.
Again, when I look at your career, I look and say, okay, how does this all connect? And I think it just connects that you say yes, you take these opportunities when they come to you. And that's a little fearless. You're really fearless.
Yeah, that's true. It's when I auditioned for Camelot with Richard Burton, and the producers ran up on stage and they said, listen, kid, can you learn the part by Friday? And this was I was leaving for Toronto the following day. It was so crazy. and I said, sure. And then when I remember auditioning for, on the 20th Century to replace, when Madeline Kahn left the show and Judy Kay took over for her, they needed to find, the new understudy for the lead. And so when I auditioned for it, Hal Prince came running up on stage and said, well, kid, can you learn the part in 48 hours? And so what do you say? Sure.
You say yes. Well, so speaking of roles you've played, we have another question. Somebody just wrote in, would love to see a revival of MAME with Christine as MAME. So we've talked about this several times on this show. This is one of those shows where you've actually played two roles. And so I was at this clip that I'm about to see, and we'll tell people what's funny about this clip. This is from the Hollywood Bowl with the great Michelle Lee, and you're playing Vera. So here's a clip of that.
I'll always be Alice Toklas if you'll be Gertrude Stein. And though I'll admit I'm
And we should tell people that young Patrick was played by a very young Ben Platt.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Did you like playing Vera? Let's start there.
Vera was so much fun. It really was so much fun. MAME is hard work. Doing MAME is hard work. Vera's like, you know, like you're on a cigarette break. It's, you know, it was just delightful. I was grateful to do both roles.
And then where did you do MAME with Kelly Bishop? Is that DC?
Yeah, that was at the Paper Mill Playhouse.
Oh, Paper Mill. And we just have a quick clip of that.
Each time that a critic has written, your voice is the voice of a frog. Straight to your side to defend you, I rush. You know I'm there every time the world makes an unkind remark. When they say Vera Charles is the world's greatest lush,
it hurts me.
If I say your fangs are showing, MAME pull in your claws, it's simply that. Who else but a bosom buddy would notice the obvious flaws?
I feel it's my duty to tell you, it's time you adjust to your age. You try to be peg of my heart when you're Lady Macbeth. Exactly how old are you, Vera? The truth.
Well, how old do you think?
Oh, I'd say somewhere in between 40 and death.
But sweetie.
Also fun.
So much fun. I love Kelly. She's the best.
When you think of the show, if you were to go back as the writer asked and do the show again, which role would you want to play?
Probably MAME, but it's like, oh, would I survive?
I mean, it's
weak. I'm telling you, it's for the young. Yeah.
You know, but you've heard Patty talk about this when you guys did War Paint, that she said, this is it. I'm not going into another leading role.
Because and I said, don't believe her.
I know. Every Tony. Time. Do you think that way? I mean, you're talking about how much of a killer MAME is. Is there a show that you're like, I do it for that?
No, not really. I mean, I think it feels like I've had so many wonderful opportunities and I've done so much and I'm just really grateful where I am right now. And I suppose that, you know, if a part came along that somebody asked me to do that I thought was something I would love to do, I would certainly do it. I don't close the doors, you know what I mean? But
right.
At the same time, I'm not like longing to do a role.
Yeah, there isn't something on your list that like you're waiting to check off.
No, because the ones that I wanted to do, I'm too long in the tooth anyway.
Was there one that got away that you like, oh, that was the one?
Oh, I think Sweeney Todd, I would have loved to have done that one.
Mm-hmm. I would have loved to have seen that, actually. That would have been interesting. Did you do Gypsy?
No, that's another one, too.
Well, you may not have done Gypsy, but you did appear in Gypsy. So tell people how happened.
That's right. Oh, my gosh, that was so much fun. Yeah, I was originally playing another part, but then I ended up doing Tessitura. I wasn't hired to do Tessitura in the beginning.
And this was the Bette Midler television version?
Yeah, in 1993.
And great strippers, right? Who else did you have with you?
Linda Hart and Anna McNeely.
Yep. And here's a little clip of you as Tessie.
All them ooh, and them ooh, and them ooh, 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 ain't gonna spell success. Me, I, but I do it with
fantastic. And all of you look like you're having so much fun on that set.
Such a blast. We had the best time. And then, of course, that was Bob Mackie who did the costumes.
Right.
And he also made my wedding dress.
Oh, how did that happen?
Because we had a mutual friend in Stanley DeSantis. And so he kind of put me in touch with him.
We showed all of the designs from Gypsy when we had him on, you know, last year talking about the book. I mean, talk about works of art.
Wow. Amazing.
So here's something I didn't know. I mean, I think the first thing I saw you in might have been Amadeus. And I had just always assumed somehow that you were doing your own singing, even though I know that that isn't necessarily your fach. But nonetheless, I said, she must have training to do it. But you didn't sing.
No, I did sing it, but it wasn't my voice on the recording. That's why it looked like it was my singing, because, you know, Milos was very adamant about, you know, I want to see your veins popping, you know. So.
How did you get Amadeus? Because that was huge.
Yeah. I auditioned for it.
I mean, is it really that simple that, like, somebody said, oh, audition, and you got it?
I think it was between me and Kiri Takanawa, who was
a real
opera singer.
How interesting is that? Yeah. Wow.
She was a real opera singer. Like, amazing.
I found a clip of a scene that I've never seen before. So, you know, this is like a This Is Your Life, Christine. It's all going by you. But you just, again, what I love about watching you is that there is always something going on in the eyes. And again, it's something that the camera catches that I wonder far away in the theater if I might have seen as much. But anyway, here's just a clip from Amadeus.
Did you know?
What?
The marriage.
What does it matter to you?
Nothing. He can marry who he pleases. I don't give a damn. How was I?
You were sublime.
And what did you think of the music?
Extremely clever. Katharina, excuse me.
Is that woman still lying on the floor?
No, she's fine.
Oh, I'm so relieved.
Dear Mozart, my sincere congratulations. Did you like it then? How could I not? It really is the best music one can hear in Vienna today. Don't you agree?
She must be dazzling in bed. I assume she's the virtuoso in that department. There can't be any other reason why you'd marry someone like that. Come in.
Excuse me. Wolfie, Mama's not feeling very well. Can we go home now?
Of course.
No, 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 no. You can't take him away now. This is his night. Won't you introduce us, Wolfgang?
Excuse us, Fräulein. Good night, Signore.
You're so good. I mean, I love that they've now that released this director's
cut. That scene was actually cut from the movie. That was, they brought that scene back in with the director's cut.
Yeah, I was watching saying I have no recollection of that scene. It's really a great scene.
It wasn't in the original cut.
I was talking to our mutual friend, Mark Sendroff, from whom all blessings flow, certainly. And I said, you know, is there anything that like I don't know or that there's a question that I should ask? And he said, well, mention to her that they basically told her in Hollywood that nothing was going to happen. And she went back to New York and won a Tony.
Yeah, they said I was over the hill.
Over the hill. And you were how old at this time?
45 or something.
I mean, how amazing is that, especially thinking of the things that you've achieved since then?
Well, I think that sometimes there's people in life that can, you know, it's an irritant that makes the pearl, you know? And I think that, you know, who are your perceived adversaries sometimes can inspire you, which I think is what happened to me. The agent that I was with at the time stopped making outgoing phone calls. I really don't think he liked actors. I think he just was, you know, liked to collect art and kind of use the money that he got from actors to do that. But, you know,
one of those things that like what doesn't kill you makes you stronger?
No, what happened was he stopped making outgoing phone calls, and I asked him, you know, like why I wasn't being sent up on auditions. And he just paused and said on the phone, well, you're 45. And so it was really one of those kind of things where, you know, I thought, you know, there's a part of you that believes that, well, maybe it is over. You know, it's like, I can't control any of that stuff about getting older and, you know, things drooping and all that. But I knew that God had given me a talent. Mm. And the talent was not something I invented. It was something that was given to me. And so I knew that my talent hadn't diminished when I grew older. If anything, it had gotten better. I mean, it was more, you know, refined with my stewardship. So that's when I thought, well, God is not going to drop me by the side of the road. And I need to take my basketball out of this court because it's not getting passed back to me. So mm-hmm. I need to go to a place where I can, you know, pass the ball and it'll get passed back to me. And that's why we left Lock, Stock and Barrel 6 months later. I had to let my contract kind of finish with this agent. And so that's when I left.
And how soon after that did you get the first nibble in New York?
I was in a play called Current Events, and that was in 2000. I moved in 1999, mm-hmm. and then in 2000, I did that. And then I did another play. It was Current Events, which was in, you know, was at that theater, the City Center. You know, there was like a theater down below in City Center. And mm-hmm. And then I did The Best Man on Broadway.
Oh, sure. The Gore Vidal.
That was in 2000.
Yeah.
And then I did a production. Connecticut Yankee. Then I did a Connecticut Yankee in the beginning of 2001. And then I did 42nd Street.
And let's show a clip of 42nd Street and talk about that.
Are the stars out tonight? I don't know if it's cloudy or bright, 'cause I only have eyes for you, dear. The moon may be high, but I can't see a thing in the sky, 'cause I only have eyes for you.
That is not somebody over the hill. I think we can agree on that.
They say the older you get, the farther east you should move. So we'll all end up in China.
But again, the control and the voice being so exposed at the beginning of that song, I think is so remarkable that, again, it the placement is perfect. And there is a richness to your voice.
I have to give some credit to Marge Rivingston, God rest her soul. She was amazing in sort of integrating my voice. She really was. And
it really developed some richness. The richness is gorgeous. So you did change your technique or how you sang?
Well, no, it's like I had a natural ability, but what she did was she kind of gave me more tools in the toolkit, you know, so I could recognize what tool I had to use to, you know, navigate some course, you know.
Was 42nd Street like, did you feel after having the bad experience with the agent that I'll show him and then you get this show and win a Tony? And did you feel vindicated in that way? Or do you not think like that? Because I do.
No, but it was a way of, like I say, I had to, in a way, thank him in my heart because, you know, even though it was not something I wanted to hear, it spurred me on.
And got you out of LA.
In other words, I didn't sit there and go, oh, he's right. I'm just going to wait for the phone to ring and something will happen. No, it's like I said, you know, hitch up the wagon. We got to get out of here because this is not going to happen, you know, unless I, you know, it was a way of taking back the reins, you know.
And also, you know, isn't it sweeter that now you're back in LA doing a series?
Yes, now that I'm over the hill, I'm back in LA. So it's like, it's really, I mean, I can't emphasize enough the gratitude that I have for all of this, really. I mean, it's unbelievable. I know that I work really hard. I know that I'm, you know, the Clydesdales work really hard. You know, they gotta carry the beer, you know, in those big things. But still, you know, to have these, to be, I don't know, it just feels like it's that song, you know, somewhere in my youth or childhood, I must have done something good. That's what it feels like. It's like, so I don't know what it is, but it's like, I don't know, this is pretty great. What's happening now?
You know, I hate to get technical, but since you just sang, you don't have a discernible break where I would picture a soprano's break.
Yeah, that's where Marge was really helpful.
So really negotiating the break.
It's just, you know, because I have a wide range and singing all these different styles, she really, you know, she threaded the whole thing together. She taught me all that, which I'm really grateful for.
Yeah, I work with a lot of opera singers. And so the passaggio is very difficult if you have a strong middle to negotiate those two notes to get into the head voice. Mm-hmm. But when I listen to you sing, because you have such a strong middle, but then the top is so crystalline. And it is like two different voices, but it doesn't sound it when you're going up the scale. It's just amazing.
Yeah. Well, and also she was so helpful because in doing 8 shows a week, you know, I never, thank the Lord, never damaged my voice.
Really?
I mean, I've lost my voice and, you know, had to get shot up. I mean, the day of the Tonys in 2017, I went to the, you know, Radio City Music Hall and not a sound would come out.
Oh my God.
It was so scary. So they sent me, you know, to get all shot up. So I was, you know.
Well, since you brought it up.
Because you're all propped up on pressure. prednisone.
Well, since you brought it up, do I have the clip here? Oh, I may not even have it. It must be here somewhere. But I was actually going to talk about Candide because, again, for somebody who I picture having such a high voice, the old woman is more of a true mezzo role.
Right.
And you're also working with an opera company, admittedly a mixed cast, but not on an HO week schedule, more in an opera company schedule.
Yes. I felt like I died and went to heaven. That was one of the most thrilling experiences of my life. To be in the midst of these opera singers, it was amazing.
I remember Patty told me when she did Ghosts of Versailles with LA Opera, and she said, what is this one show, 3 days off crap? Let's just do it. Come on. And I'm like, that's her training. And that's not how opera singers work.
Yeah, because she's like an extraterrestrial. I mean, she just like, I would stand off stage and just go, who are you that you can sing like this and do 8 shows a week? Who are you? She was amazing.
Okay, well, before we talk about Patty, let's just show a clip of you in Candide, because it's just extraordinary. It's funny because Linda Lavin had done the role, and she was concerned about the range, you know, and fitting it into her range. And I was flabbergasted when I saw you, because in my head, this should not be a right role for you. And it sounds like it's written for you. So let's just take a look.
In one half hour, I'm talking in Spanish. Por favor, toreador. I am easily assimilated. I am so easily assimilated. It's easy, it's never so easy. I'm Spanish, I'm suddenly Spanish. And you must be Spanish too.
Okay, that's all should be break. And I've heard so many mezzos have to go negotiate from middle voice to the top. With you, it sounds seamless. Was it hard?
No. It wasn't. The thing is that I really appreciated that they had an opera coach there that helped me create the operatic sound.
Mm-hmm. Had you never sung like that before?
Well, yes, but it's because, I mean, I just have this, it's a natural ability, but it's the technique that you have to learn. And
right.
And so that's why the teachers were very effective and helpful in just terms of not letting me stick out, you know, to be able to fit in into that genre of opera.
Right. Right. I'm sorry I didn't see that production, because I mean, what
it was amazing. The singers were beyond belief. To be a part of that was such a thrill. It was such a thrill.
I was thrilled just seeing the clip. So Grey Gardens, like you said, that was, I mean, if you get one Grey Gardens in your life, you're awfully lucky.
Yes. Yes.
And it's like the little show that could, because mm-hmm. it started very small, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. At Playwrights.
And got this fanaticism about it, that people were going back and back, and word of mouth. There's a video, I don't have that. It's a video of the last performance at Playwrights, and it's like a rock concert.
Yeah.
I mean, when did you think, wow, we've got something here?
Well, I don't know that I thought about it in terms of, I mean, I knew it was special, but I don't think mm-hmm. I don't think in terms of commercial viability, you know. It's just sort of how do I relate to this role, and you know, I just thought it was something of great value.
And if it had ended at Playwrights, it would have been just another gig.
Well, yeah, I felt that it really should go to Broadway. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did everything I could to, you know, that's why somebody had asked me, well, why don't we just take it down the street, you know, to this little Schubert Theater, you know, mm-hmm. that theater that's on 42nd Street,
yeah,
down the street from Playwright.
Technically off Broadway, but it's there, right?
I said, either it goes to Broadway or not, because it's like, there's no point in making a lateral move with it.
Right.
It needs to expand and be taken to the next level. And it was, I felt that the piece was very worthy of that. And of course it was.
And it's got to be an interesting experience that you get to play your own mother.
Yeah.
I remember seeing you in the role, and it was so interesting watching so many little mannerisms you did in the first act pay off in the second act in Mary Louise's portrayal. You worked so in sync with each other. That has got to have been an extraordinary relationship.
Yeah, I just love her so much. She's amazing. Amazing.
Is it easier when you're on that journey with somebody who is a partner?
Well, I think that was just kind of built in to the piece, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's really theater anyway. You know, it's really, if there's anything that's a team sport, it's theater, it's live theater that you can't really get anywhere else.
And again, a payoff of another Tony Award.
Yeah.
Let's just remind people of the Tony. So now we know that you're shot up and on drugs at this point.
That was a war paint.
Oh, war paint. Oh, okay. Oh, we don't have that clip. All right. Oh, on this one, because you sound fantastic in this. Was there a performance, I kept trying to find it, where the magnifying glass, the glass fell out of the magnifying glass?
No, I don't remember that.
Okay. Somebody said to me, oh, I'd ask her about the magnifying glass falling away. It's not in this. Anyway, and let me ask about the character. So you'd obviously seen the documentary of Grey Gardens. And again, it's not an imitation because it's so different. And yet you carry the spirit and essence of Little Edie.
Yeah.
Did you study it much, or do you just have a really good ear for voices and accents?
I have, it's both. I mean, I do have a good ear for that. But I was so endlessly fascinated with the documentary, and this was before I even knew that it was going to happen. I mean, I never thought.
Really?
I was absolutely obsessed with the documentary.
It's a fantastic piece of art, isn't it?
It's amazing. It's amazing. And, you know, I think the part of, for me, what the fascination was, you know, how could these women that were born in this position, this high position of society, end up like this? You know, like, that's not possible.
Did you ever come up with an answer after playing the role and embodying her?
Well, I think that I felt one interesting observation that I felt shaped my performance was that, you know, the station that they were born in, they were kind of birds in a gilded cage. Mm-hmm. But when the money ran out and the Grey Gardens went into disrepair, terrible disrepair, and there was, you know, cats and raccoons and just garbage everywhere, that was when they were free to express themselves as they were. That was the irony behind it, you know?
Yeah, I you know, it's funny because I, after seeing the documentary the first time, I had done reading about them because you wonder what happened to them and you find out. And your portrayal is so sympathetic and you play her. I mean, it so easily could have been a parody or gone sure. on to caricature, but it had yeah. such heart and grounded in reality. And yeah. sympathy. That's the other thing. You had so yeah. much sympathy. Every time the mother yelled to her, it was yeah. like a little knife.
Yeah. Well, I think there was, you know, I don't know. I had, there was some strange identity, you know, that I, there was like a camaraderie that I felt with these women. I don't know. It's hard to explain, really.
Having played both of them, did you have the same feeling for both? Did you identify more with one or the other?
Well, I think I identified more with little Edie.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way to me. Let's just show a little clip.
Because it's all...
And that's the revolution.
Go ahead. What were you...
No, I was going to say, you know, because Act One took place in 1941, it was more out of my imagination.
Whereas and also, Act like two, you said, the money hadn't run out yet, so it's a whole different world.
Right, but it was more out of my imagination. So, but Act Two was more out of just sort of an embodiment of what I saw on the documentary. So that was the difference between those. The first act was out of my imagination. The second act was just sort of gleaning from what I took from the documentary, you know.
Right. Sort of the difference between a reality show and a drama.
Yeah.
Okay, let's just show a little clip.
And that's the revolutionary costume pour du jour. You mix and match and presto, a fashion manifesto. That's why a revolutionary costume's de rigueur. The rhododendrons are hiding spies, the pussy willows have beady eyes, binoculars through the
What a special night that must have been for you.
Yeah, it was.
So now going to war paint, you know, which I saw in Chicago. And I love seeing a show on the road because you get to see sort of the work in progress. And that's another show that you were involved in from the beginning. So was
no,
that?
No, I wasn't from the beginning. No, okay. It was Donna Murphy.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was it? When did you get involved? How far along were they?
They had done a bunch of workshops, I think. And Donna's husband took ill. And so mm-hmm. she left the show.
And talk about a double act. I mean, we talked to Beaupé Lupone. Now, there's a show where it seems very down the middle. It seems very equal. Nobody has more. It to the point that, like, it almost seemed, okay, well, she's got an 11 o'clock number. Oh, my God, it's 11 o'clock again because there's another 11 o'clock number. was that by design? Was that how it was structured to really keep everything? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I loved the fact that every time you guys spoke and anytime you did interviews, it was really pushing the point of we're a team. We're not competitive. Although you're competitive on stage because you're playing competitors.
Yes.
But you really seem to be competing for the same goal, which was the show.
Yes, absolutely.
Did it change much from Chicago to New York?
Yes, there were some songs that were changed and things, but I think it just kind of just grew more, you know, it just was like more, became more realized.
And did you enjoy playing, you know, Elizabeth Arden? Was that a role that you were able to identify with?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just sort of, how do you, you know, you just always try to look for the humanity.
because it's funny, we talked about Mame and Vera and that you could play either role. I, in my head, I'm like, could I see Patty and Christine switching roles?
No,
and while it would be a really interesting thing to see, but I don't know if it would be a satisfying thing to see. I don't know if I want to see you play that role or her play yours.
Yeah. I think we were fit for the parts we played.
Was it all in all a happy experience, or do you feel that the show should have really found more of an audience?
Well, you know, it's those things are so hard to say. You just never know. You just go in with the love of the project and the music and the people that you're working with, and you know, see where it lands.
And so now we bring us up to current date, which is back on television.
Yeah.
So how did Bob Loves Evashola come to you? Our hearts.
I got an audition.
Again with these auditions. You're killing me, Ebersol. I mean, it's not, now again, people at home, it's not like she's reading the trades and it's an open call. It's not like that, is it?
No, I got a call from my agent.
Now there's an agent who actually makes calls.
The agent I have now is you know, the hardest working man in show business. I love him, Barry McPherson, APA. Anyway, I got an audition, and I went in and was put on tape in New York, and they sent the tape to LA. So then I got a call that Chuck Lorre wanted to meet me for the test. So there were two other women that were up for the role.
And you ended up getting it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's funny because it seems to me so against type in so many ways.
Yeah.
But I think that's also what's going to be fun as an actor, is to play that.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, you say some horrible things.
Terrible, yeah.
And is that fun for you? I mean, is it fun playing Mitchie character?
I'm having the time of my life. I'm having the time of my life. First of all, it's like the most amazing cast. It's just like family, you know, we genuinely, there's not a bad apple in the bunch. And there's just a genuinely, it's such a fun group, you know, and they're hilariously funny. And without being on, you know, it's just their takes on stuff. Billy Gardell is just the best. He's such
so
a great,
funny.
You know, he's such a great leader, you know, of the band. And it's just, you know, I'm just so grateful. Chuck is amazing. I mean, it's just, what? How did I get here? You know?
So did you have to relocate? Or a Clydesdale? Did you have to relocate?
No, I ended up at Clydesdale. I wanted to be a nurse, but I ended up at Clydesdale.
Did you have to relocate, or are you just doing like a 2 weeks on, 1 week off?
No, it is kind of like, you know, bi-coastal, you know?
Yeah.
We have a house in New Jersey that we've been in for, you know, 23 years, and an apartment in LA.
Cool. Let's show, somebody put a clip together of some of your best moments. And this just made me laugh because I said, what clip do I show? And this has like five of them. So let's just show this.
That's beautiful. You did really good.
I better make it official before she wises up.
Oh, good thinking.
Our niece is a good Christian girl. She would be a step up for your family.
The Wicked Witch of the West would be a step up for my family.
You want people to respect you? You need to respect yourself. So no more whoring around.
Mom, you can't say that. That's called slut shaming.
Then stop being a slut. Mommy's back and you're all grounded. Call your wives, husbands, boyfriends, girlfriends, whoever's dumb enough to sleep with you. Tell them not to wait up. We're working late. Bob! Bob! Help! Hurry!
Why are you screaming?
Well, you don't hustle if you think it's a drill.
I'm going to take you on one of those mother-daughter cruises. I can go as Angelina Jolie and you can be one of my orphans.
Do you I can't. Do you ever feel like, oh, this is crossing the line, or let's go even further?
Well, I guess they, you know, they have confidence in me that I can sell it.
And where did you come up with the voice? Because the voice is hysterical.
That's not, there is no, that's my voice, unfortunately.
That's no,
my Midwestern, it is, no, that's my Midwestern really? Voice.
Oh, God.
That's it. I'm sorry, you know, it's like I say, it's unfortunate, but it's, that's just a part of my natural Midwestern, you know.
But it's got a little edge to it. It's certainly accentuated a bit.
I guess.
Okay, I'm not showing you any more clips because we got to wind up. I just want to ask you, because I'm not going to show this clip. People, you have to look this up for yourself. Tell me what it was like doing the revival of Steel Magnolias.
Oh, that was amazing. What a great cast. Good grief.
You're right. Tell people who's the cast. It was you, Delta, right, was in it?
Mm-hmm.
I can't
get the bio out.
I know, right. I know Delta Burke. But
yeah,
what?
Gayheart, Lily
oh,
Rabe.
Right. Right.
Frances Sternhagen, Marcia Mason.
Oh, right.
It's crazy.
There you go. See?
Yeah.
Right. Again, what a great cast. And again, what a perfect role for you.
Yeah, it was really great.
Southern. Once again, not Midwest, mm-hmm. Southern.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Look, I know I got to wrap. So I'm going to remind people, if you look underneath, there is a link to buy tickets. Provincetown, it's early on New Year's Eve. It's like 7 o'clock or something.
Is it?
It's something early. Tom just sent me the press release. Yeah, it's early. So that's good. So if you want to go see a show and then go out and get drunk, you can do that. And you
good.
Can too. I mean, you know, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
And have you've done Provincetown before, haven't you?
Yeah, mm-hmm, but not Town Hall. You, that's my first.
No,
time
you've
town
only
hall.
Done.
Yeah.
Right, you've done the Art House.
Yeah, the Art House. Mm-hmm.
Right. Oh my God, it's going to be so fantastic! And again, with the fabulous Billy Stretch, how can you go wrong?
I can't.
And I'm just going to remind people: get the CD. Oh my God! I just look at this, and your husband is so hot.
Yeah, he's very good looking.
Yeah.
I'm very, very grateful for that. wait, is it getting so dark in here?
You're suddenly like in a tunnel. Well, it's LA.
Yeah, because it's you know, I just I'm using
4 in the afternoon.
Yeah, it's in the daylight, but okay, is that better?
There you are.
Yeah, that's
it's almost like some old Betty Davis, like the watcher in the woods, you know, with a lantern or something. before I let you go. I'm just curious, you seem to be so happy, which I'm not saying, I'm not questioning that. You seem happy. You seem happy with your personal life and your professional life. And it always seems to me that, and this is something like Patti LuPone, that these people who, whatever happens, they have a good, solid personal life. And so they're not basing their happiness on their work. They have a well-rounded life.
Yeah.
You know, how did you and your husband end up meeting? And is that really what's given you just like your stability in your life?
Absolutely. Yeah. We met on the set of The Kavanaughs, which was a TV show I did with Barnard Hughes back in 1986. And he was the musical director. And so we got married in 1988. And that was 35 years ago. And really,
it's,
I mean,
that's
people
the
ask
secret.
Me, people, well, people ask me like, what is your, you know, greatest achievement? And I would have to say family.
Yeah.
You know, it's my children and my husband and my family. Without that, really, you know, everything pales next to that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And it's funny because you talk about how many things happened that, oh, we're going to go to LA. Oh, I'm finished here. Let's go to New York. But you didn't have any of that upheaval in your personal life.
No, thankfully. Good grief. Can you imagine?
No.
I know people that, it's like, marriage is hard work. It really is. And it's commitment and all of that. So, Bill is very stable in that way. He's always been very, very stable. So if I go off in here and go off there and go all that, then it's like there's always that rock, that I can return to, that rock of stability that I can always count on. So that's really, really, really been such a great blessing in my life.
Because of that, are you driven professionally or are you much more easygoing, whatever comes?
I think I was driven, back in my 40s. Well, all that time, but particularly I think during that time, when I was trying to prove something, I don't have that so much anymore. I really don't.
Yeah.
I'm just grateful for whatever opportunities, but I don't sit there and go, I've got to do this. It's just not, I think that's just from from just getting older. The things that were so important to you, you realize that what's the most important thing is family. And so that's really, the rest is, it's all gravy,
Well, if family is what makes you a success, then you're a success, but you're a success two times over because professionally you are one of the best of the best. And you know that, and we know that, and people should go to Provincetown for New Year's Eve to see you. Are you still able with this schedule to do your cabaret shows and do other things on a hiatus?
Not so much. Although I did go to New Orleans with Billy. And I'm doing this New Year's Eve, but basically I'm out here doing the show till like mid-April.
Mm-hmm. And since last week we remembered Leslie Jordan, and I know that you had worked with Leslie. Do you have any memories of him? I mean, Varla talking about giving you guys a tour in New Orleans just sounds hysterical.
I just really was sorry to see him go, He was very, you felt like you were being really supported when you were in his midst, like you were part of this really fun family. And, he was just very supportive.
Yeah.
Encouraging and all that kind of stuff. If you had any doubts or whatever, he would just, tell you to keep going.
Well, Christine Ebersole, thank you for coming by. Thank you for keeping going. And I'm looking forward. I think I'm going to come down on New Year's Eve and see you guys.
I hope so.
Yeah, I'll be in Boston. Why not? Take a little drive. I just won't drive home. I'll stay.
Yeah, good. Good idea.
Thanks, Christine. Take care.
Thanks so much for having me. All the best. God bless.
Bye-bye, honey. Everybody, thank you for watching Billy Masters Live. So again, right below, there's a link to buy tickets to see Christine Ebersole and Billy Stritch on New Year's Eve in Provincetown. Also, while you're there, there's a little link right there. There's a bell. There's a link. Just click anything you can. Let me see. Okay, she's gone now. If I have anything that I was going to show that I said, I don't want. Okay. Look, there's just between us. Don't tell her. Okay. So I have a clip of her in Camelot with Richard Burton. She doesn't sing. So that's why I didn't want to show it. But she looks beautiful. And so I'm going to show you the clip of Christine Ebersole with Richard Burton. Because, if I had a clip with me and Richard Burton, I'd show it. And then we're going. So I have been Billy Masters Live. And next week, Jennifer Lewis, Wednesday, details to follow, but I believe it's Wednesday, like 7 p.m. Eastern. It's late, but you know, it is what it is. She's Jennifer Lewis. You take what you can get. All right, here's Christine and Richard Burton and Camelot. And just remember, this has been Billy Masters. And if we're here, we're live. Bye, guys.
Camelot, Camelot, I know it sounds a bit bizarre, but in Camelot, Camelot, that's how the dishes are. And the rain must never fall till after sundown. By 8 the morning fog must disappear. It's all this simply not a more congenial spot for happy.